today. We'd appreciate that very much. Next Thursday, our guest speaker is Eric Williams, who is president of the Canadian Nuclear Society. He is going to speak on the subject, nuclear energy, right for Alberta or not. So that's the subject that we'll be giving some attention to next week. Our speakers today are Margaret Bandman and Lindsay Robinson, nutritionist and kinesiologist. Am I getting any closer to that? Good. Well, we're very pleased to have them here. We want them to come back, and we invite members of the audience to come up and ask their questions. Introduce yourself, first of all, and if you want to make a comment or two, that's okay, but please ask a question. Okay. Our first questioners, Margaret and Lindsay.
Thank you, Austin, and we'd just like to thank the restaurant for the great lunch that they put on today at our request. We really appreciate them doing that, and please respond with your feedback and be honest. You don't have to say it was good just because we're here. There's no questions. Does this happen?
Hi. It's been a little while since I've been up here, so I don't remember the protocol. My name is Heather Caldwell, and I had a question. If we're looking at some of the seniors in this room as role models, as far as physical activity goes, if you were organizing, say, sort of exercise classes, what would be some really great exercises that both youth can be challenged by and seniors can benefit from as well?
My thoughts on that, walking is definitely one of the first choices. We are currently trying to put together a Walking Wednesdays program where seniors come and walk children home from school. So we're getting the kids active and also providing them with a safe route home from school. Something else that comes to mind is just having the seniors being able to teach the younger children what they did for activity when they were younger. So what kind of games they played and being able to pass on those traditions. Anything else? No?
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Oops. Howard Forsyth. I need Ken Balderson of McGrath to come up and illustrate my question. Ken?
Not you or my friend.
We were talking yesterday, and I said, Ken, what the heck? He's 90 years old. Look at him. I said, what the heck did you did wrong? What did you do wrong? And when you talk about exercise, he and a lot of his friends in McGrath grew on a farm. You got plenty of exercise. You ate vegetables and you had plenty of access to fat, but you didn't know. Of course, he says his genetics is some part of it. But what's your observation with a farm background? You can't put people on a farm anymore. You're talking about urban sprawl. You can't send them to McGrath and say, get out on a farm. You have a lot of contact with the people like you and me who grew up on a farm, and you see them, and you know that generation, but you look at their grandchildren. Do you notice any difference in the grandchildren of the people that, say, in McGrath that you knew and stayed thin? Some didn't. He did a lot of things wrong. He stayed thin.
Do you want to answer that question?
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Okay, I don't need a mic.
I don't know. Howard used to be my friend. He's not a friend anymore. But I really don't have a question. But exercise is the only thing that's going to, one, the main thing that you make, get, stay healthy, and you can get rid of that, whatever this is out here. And exercise, we have a few grandkids. Every one of them have been real athletes.
I grew up on a farm, but I've been around the world several times. And the big thing is exercise of all kind. I still do a lot of exercise. I play 18 holes of golf, and I have a treadmill in the house. And I have no question except exercise and eat right. Thank you.
Thank you. I would say he's a good role model.
I would say he is too. Terry Shellington, thank you for your presence and your comments. And I have a question. About reading material and ongoing research about food. We subscribe to the University of Berkeley Wellness Letter. And I've, in the course of that, you get on the promotional list for a bunch of other magazines, some of which I've tried and some of which I haven't. I wonder if you have any. And I appreciate the University of Berkeley Wellness Letter for its research around food and related health issues. And I wonder if you have any recommendations or comments about reading material that, I guess I'm thinking about journals because food is evolving and ongoing and chemicals and treatment of food is ongoing. If you have any suggestions about reading material for people who want to stay abreast of what's changing with food.
Okay, and I am familiar with that University of California at Berkeley Wellness Letter, and it's very good. It's very well researched. Another really good one that I enjoy that I think is it's not so scientific, but it's very well researched, and it's for the public. It's a nutrition action letter, and it's Heather, what's the name of the organization? It's the Study for Science in the Public. Center for Science and the Public Interest. And it's very good, and it doesn't have any advertising in it, so you know that nobody's endorsing anything. And it has really good articles in there that are of interest to all of us. I would really recommend that one. And then there's lots of good information on the Internet. You just have to be careful where it's sourced from. It's almost like there's too much information out there, and we have to sift it. Yeah, the Dietitians of Canada has a very good website as well. And then you can also look at the American Dietetics Association, too. And then also on the Internet, even just the Health Canada websites and things to do with Canada's food guide, there's all kinds of links on there. You guys are all computer savvy, right? but there is very good information out there.
Just on the active living side, the Alberta Centre for Active Living has lots of great resources and a really great resource library that would have anything that they would have would be credible for you to read. And they also have a very strong senior section of information that is directed just at seniors.
Go ahead. My name is Sylvia Campbell, and I'm interested in the issue of poverty and nutrition. And I'm just wondering, I know there's a community kitchen where people can get together and cook healthy meals inexpensively.
Right.
Are there any other resources in Lethbridge? I think there's still a food co-op.
Right. There's those community kitchens that are in operations. People can go and cook collectively. There's also the Good Food Box, and actually Heather Caldwell is here. And she organizes all that. It's like a community, like a co-op where people are getting fresh fruits and vegetables at a very good price. And actually, there's pamphlets about that out on the table out in the hallway there. And the poverty issue is really connected to poor nutrition for sure. And we find that when we look at people's income levels, it's inconclusive whether that's relating to obesity or not. And I know that sounds a little bit doesn't seem to make any sense, but sometimes when people are on a low income, they will purchase foods that are cheap and not necessarily nutritious. And so they can actually be getting a lot of calories, but it's not very nutritional food. So sometimes people on low income can be quite overweight. And so it's a real problem for sure.
Graham Greenlee is my name. We see a lot of runners and joggers around town, and some of them run quite a lot, as we know. And also, in older people, we quite often see people having hip replacements and knee replacements. Is there a correlation?
I'm not sure. That would have to be my honest answer. I think that you're right in that there are a lot of people who can overdo running and jogging, and that may have some correlation with them having to have joint replacements later on. But there are a lot of people who aren't runners or joggers who have to have joint replacements, and that is just something that we have to deal with as older adults. I'm not sure what else to answer you with there. I think that as we age, we need to start doing activities that aren't hard on our joints. I'm not a runner. I have bad knees even at my age, and so I really avoid doing anything that has impact. So getting in a pool, getting on a bike, doing a yoga class or something with low impact is where you want to put your energy. Even if you've had a hip replacement or a knee replacement, you can still be active.
Hello, I'm Jean Fennell. I'd like to, you to comment on us reading labels, and especially fat, and especially trans fat. How can we read labels intelligently?
Okay, that's a good question. First of all, I think that we should be quite thankful that we have those labels now, because a few years back we were all kind of guessing at what was in our food, so it's nice that the labels are there. But you have to read them quite intelligently. And the first thing you have to do is to see what is their serving size, because sometimes the actual package, you might think that they're analyzing that whole thing, but they'll tell you exactly what they consider to be a serving size. And then what they are listing as your fat content will be for that serving size. So it might appear that it's lower fat, but if you eat the whole thing and they're actually only analyzing maybe a fourth of it, then you have to multiply everything by four to get the right results. And they have to tell you how much is saturated, and they have to give you the trans fat count out of that as well. So those are good things that they have to give us that information now. But you do have to be aware of what they're analyzing it and what it's based on.
I'm Ralph Arnold. I'd like to answer the question about the runners. I'm one of them. And Runner's World magazine a couple of years ago had a study on this listed in it, and runners actually have less knee injuries than typical North Americans. I would say that most people who would be obese would have more problems with their knees than a runner. And as a comment on what you guys are doing, you have a big uphill battle, man. This is a worldwide trend, and our society has just got problems. I mean, you're well aware of it.
That's why we need everyone's help.
I know. Anyway, good luck. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Yeah, thank you.
My name is Doug Miller. I live about two blocks south of the high schools on the south side. And regularly I see high school students walking by my front door. And this is supposed to be a gym activity or a physical activity. They're certainly not got their heart rate up. I just wonder, what do high school students get in the way of exercise, excluding those that play football or basketball?
High school is a difficult age to look at, and it is an area of concern for us as well. There are guidelines in place in Alberta called daily physical activity, and that applies to any child who's in kindergarten through grade 9, that they must have at least 30 minutes of physical activity a day. But once you get into high school, taking phys ed is an option. And so I cannot say with any sort of accuracy how much activity high school students are getting. Some high schools are still going to have their students being active if it's important to the administration. But for some schools, those kids might not be getting any activity. And just to comment on the walking, they might not be getting their heart rates up, but walking is one of the best things that you can do just to experience general health benefits. So it still is good that they're getting out there. And it's an inclusive activity. We're not just looking at those kids that are athletes. Anyone can come out and participate and feel successful in that.
Thank you. My name is John Boris. I've often wondered how much stuff you can stuff down somebody's throat. And I'd just like to ask you, all of us are aware that tobacco has been cut out as far as, I don't know, I was going to say North America, Canada anyway. I don't know what happens to the other. I haven't seen anything. But the point is, smoking is something that had the same problems you have with obesity now. And if you can get those people that are responsible right at the root of the problem, smokers just don't smoke, and people to avoid being obese, it's not that difficult if you watch or push away. And could I ask you the question, is there any similarity? And if there is, they've done a good job, and they've cut out smoking. And we should check very closely what they appear to be doing that is successful. Okay. And maybe it's a disservice, I don't know. But is there a parallel between those two things?
Yeah. That's a good question, because a lot of the strategies that they've used to reduce tobacco consumption are things that we're looking at as well. The thing that's a little bit challenging, though, is food is something that you have to have to survive, and tobacco is something that you don't. And you're also dealing with people's freedoms, right? And there's a lot of people that think that it's their right to eat what they want. But some of the things that we're looking at is the advertising of food to children, trying to regulate that so that there's not as much advertising, or it isn't at certain periods of time if they're watching TV, because they see an amazing number of advertisements in a day if they're watching TV. And most of the advertising of food is not healthy food. And so, I mean, they're impacted by that. They're surrounded by that. Other things that we are hoping to have in place in Alberta are some guidelines for nutrition in schools, and so that we can hopefully, you know, there's so many vending machines in schools, and some schools have switched over so that they have some healthier choices. Gilbert Patterson has done that. Wilson Middle School has done that. So it is possible to have healthier choices, but if you look in a lot of schools, it's just not the case. And a lot of kids come to school without a lunch, and they're buying their food from the vending machines, and so there's no healthy choices. And some schools have canteens that offer other foods, but again, we'd like to have some sort of regulations in place so there are healthier choices for the kids. So it's a toxic environment for them if there's no healthy choices. And we'd like to kind of begin with schools, but then move out into the greater community. And I think that some of the greater challenges will be places like ice arenas. Like, I mean, it's kind of ironic. I mean, you take your kids there, or your grandchildren there, to play hockey, and then there's nothing healthy for them to have. And so those are things we would really like to see in place. Alberta actually has these nutrition guidelines in draft form. So hopefully those will be in place, and we don't know if people will voluntarily accept them and take them on, or if it's going to have to go to some sort of legislation. The other thing that has been talked about as well is taxing food that is not nutritious, or the so-called fat tax. And so that is an option as well. But I would actually like to see it go where nutritious foods are less expensive. So they're like subsidized, so that the healthy choice is an easy choice for people to see when they go into a grocery store or something like that, but it's also economical.
Hello, I'm Diane Pointer, and I've really enjoyed this. My question is going to be a little unusual. Screen time. I watch TV and from time to time see things like eating contests. Who can shovel the most food into their mouths? I think it is absolutely disgusting, and I think it should be actually illegal to encourage or turn eating into some kind of a contest. For one thing, it's unhealthy. For another thing, if there's not that much food to give away free and waste, give it to people who really, really, really need it. I just think it's awful.
My name is Stacey Verostek. I have a 5-year-old daughter who's been diagnosed with ADHD, which is a problem. It's a problem, ADHD in children, and it's becoming more and more often that this is diagnosed. And I wondered if you had any tips for parents or grandparents of children like this for when it comes down to going to the grocery store. Are organics better? Are there specific types of foods that we should be staying away from as far as food dyes, colorings, sugar types?
Just before you go, can you just explain what ADHD is to people?
ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and these are children that are very, very active. So that's why I'm wondering if there's a direct correlation between the sugar amounts in foods. Some doctors say that you should stop with yellow and red food dyes. no more foods over 15 grams of sugar. So I wondered if you had any tips for parents who are going into the grocery store to do the grocery shopping itself.
Okay. I'm not really aware of the actual recommendations for that in terms of diet, but I could tell you that your child would probably be better off to follow just a really well-balanced diet, and so that they're not having too much sugar anyway, so that their treats or their desserts would be more fruit-based. And for so many things that are health problems, the diet treatment is actually the same. It's just to follow a really well-balanced diet, lower fat, higher fiber. Our community health nutritionist is here. I don't know if she has any comments about that.
Heather? About the ADHD?
Hi. I would agree with Margaret, and using the food label, too, to make sure you're not – they've got the sugars listed on the food labels now, so you could be careful – with that, I don't know so much it's the sugar, though, but sugar for anyone, we're not going to have as much energy. And it makes us, if we have too many sugary foods, it doesn't stay in our stomach as long, so we get hungry sooner. And so I'm even affected mentally. And so I can see children, too, if they're having sugary cereals. So try to get a cereal that's unsweetened and things like that. Guidelines from diabetes too for labeling. We've got some courses at the Building Healthy Lifestyle program. They're free classes, and they can teach you how to look at labels, and they focus a lot on the sugar content. So, yeah. I know, you know, not skipping meals too, your attention, your mental attitude is going to be different, and that's one reason why Heather Caldwell got into the Good Food Club too, because she noticed with her mental health clients that she was dealing with, if they didn't have a good diet, and often they didn't, their mental health was affected. So eating more vegetables and fruits and that balance, like Margaret was saying. Yeah. And you can call at the health unit, too, if you want more information on that.
Dr. Dave, did you have anything to add about the ADHD treatment? Or you're good?
Exactly what we said.
Okay, good.
Hi, my name is Knut Peterson, and I was wondering if you could expand upon the impact that obesity has on our healthcare system.
Okay. The impact on the healthcare system is a ripple effect, because as more and more people are becoming overweight or obese, then we'll start to see more chronic illnesses like heart disease, type 2 diabetes, joint problems, breathing difficulties, and there are certain types of cancer that are associated with obesity as well. And then, as I mentioned in the presentation, treating people that have obesity has an added cost just because they are heavier. And when a surgeon does surgery, it's much more difficult. And they require a longer time being under anesthetic, and then the actual surgery itself is much more complicated. And it just starts to ripple out from there. And then also, if you consider the emotional and psychological problems that go along with that for adults and for children, then we'll start to see healthcare costs in that field as well. And so it just starts from the middle and starts to spread out.
Okay. Just as an addition, part of our slideshow that we did today, we had a statistic from 97 saying that the direct cost of obesity was more than $1.8 billion
on our healthcare system. And today we actually found a more recent statistic, which was from 2001, saying that the actual cost was more like $5.3 billion a year. So you can see why the governments are starting to put some more money towards prevention, because they're just having to pay out so much more on the other end.
Hello, my name is James Moore. Thank you both for coming, and certainly at our table, the change in menu was unanimously appreciated, so thanks for that, too. You're doing a good job, but I think about, you know, one question about the idea of the self-role community. I think, don't you think that we have to look at the other line, like from the policy line and the government line? For example, when you have corporations which target children, when you have corporations which, you know, we all know the supersizing phenomenon, where the calculation is, you know, we can make a little bit more money, so let's push a little bit more product. What about, you know, policies challenging that at a higher level, like Quebec, which bans advertising to children under 13, like policies of making schools free, I mean, recreation free, with a view to the future, saving on healthcare. What would you see as the role of government? I mean, higher level policy making towards this?
Well, as I mentioned before, we would like to see policies in place regarding the foods that are available to children in schools and any public place where children are, and then also policies in place regarding our public active spaces as well. And the reason I think that in the presentation we stressed the importance of being a good role model first is just that we felt it was important that people had their own thoughts and health kind of together before they start to move out into the community and political areas. I think that it's really important that we do elect our leaders that do care about these things, and it's important then as citizens to ask our politicians what they think. And I believe the Dietitians of Canada have lobbied the federal government before as well to try to get some of these policies in place. And I think that the more people that pressure these changes to happen, the more likely it is to occur. I hesitate to say that I think it's better if it comes from the top down, because I personally believe that most movements are better when they come from the grassroots up. So if the more of us that recognize this as being a real problem that needs to be addressed, I mean, our kids are suffering from diseases that normally don't occur until middle age. And so this is like a crisis. And so we all need to rally together to get things moving. And I think that we all individually do play that role.
Just to add to that, we are trying to work with the government, even just at our municipal level, to try and effect changes in the community that are going to help us have healthier lifestyles for adults and for children and youth. But it's not an easy process. And what we've found with the school board, in just talking with Barry Latoon, who is the superintendent for School District 51, is that more of the schools are wanting the initiatives to come from the bottom up. They don't want to be told what to do. They want to be self-governing. And a big piece with trying to get the buy-in for students is that they are actually part of the solution. And so we want to have focus groups of students. Likewise, we could do the same in the community, where we can get feedback from people to see what kind of manageable changes they would like to make, rather than being told what they need to do. And they might not listen anyway in that case.
My name's Cheryl Bradley, and I sort of have this sense of deja vu, because I'm past half a century in age, and I remember the Participaction Program when I was a young person. And my understanding was that that was a very successful program, like that it accomplished what it set out to accomplish. And I'm wondering if you're familiar with that, if you understand the reasons why it was discontinued, and does it give us some lessons about we constantly have to be vigilant about being more active and eating better? We just can't say, oh, now we've done that, we're finished, we'll go on to something else. some insights based on learning from our history, I'd appreciate.
I think you're right that participation was very important, and the government has actually realized that, and there was an announcement just on October 15th that they have brought participation back as a social marketing campaign to try and get people active. I think we're starting to see the effects of the recreation cuts and the funding to programs for children and youth that happened along with the cut of participation, and so they're looking to try and bring those sorts of programs back, and that's one very good example is the participation. Action. So watch for those commercials on TV.
I think in the last maybe 60, 70 years especially, we have become a materialistic society. Consequently, we constantly emphasize the body will, and so we feed that thing. And when it really comes down to it, folks, we're triune. We're body, soul, and spirit. I think, if I'm right, I'll ask you, am I right that if we would emphasize those three points more, we wouldn't have to eat so much, we'd be satisfied with other things? I don't know how many people here are religious, but I'm interdenominational in my thinking, and I happen to believe the Bible. And St. Paul, we today emphasize body first, soul, and maybe spirit, if at all. We've taken our Bibles out of our school. We've taken the Lord's Prayer out of our school. We've taken the Ten Commandments out of school. The kids are empty. We hear a lot about in the papers these days about this emptiness people are having. They don't know what to fill it, and they're trying to fill it with alcohol. They're trying to fill it with a lot of eating and so on. Now, St. Paul reversed that. And 1 Thessalonians chapter 5:23, I think it is, spirit, soul, body. He reversed that. Now, am I right on that? That if we would emphasize the triune make up a man more, then we wouldn't, and fulfill each of those areas, we wouldn't fill our bellies so much.
Okay, I'll respond to that. I actually think that it's mind, body, spirit that people need to keep in balance, and that your spirit, it's individual for people how they perceive that. A lot of times when people are experiencing eating disorders or eating too much, they are trying to fill a void. And I have encountered clients before that know more about nutrition than I do, but they can't stop eating because they're trying to cover up some, and sometimes it's abuse and that kind of thing. And so during treatment, I think that health professionals do need to address that. And so I think that there is something there to people overeating if they're trying to fill a void or a sadness within them. But I do think we have to respect where people are coming from spiritually and religiously and how they view their life.
Sorry, I'm here again. I am from a family that is very meat, potatoes oriented. I don't know if anybody else is, but I grew up on a baked potato and a steak every night. So when it comes to cooking for my daughter, I'm kind of revert back to that because that's how I grew up. So do you have any suggestions on where people can find recipes or meal planning ideas that might be a little more nutritious and then therefore help us a little bit?
We actually brought some materials with us, and so anything that's out on those tables out there, people are welcome to take home with them. And so, yes, she's got that one. It has recipes in the back. And then there's also little cookbooks out there that are to teach children how to cook nutritious meals themselves. If you also check out our Healthy You website that I can talk to you about that later. There's some really good information there. And also the Health Canada website, I would recommend that one. So there's good information out there. And if you were brought up on meat and potatoes, you just need to throw a few vegetables in there and then just beware of your portions. Okay.
We want to thank Margaret and Lindsay very much. And we